welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by the OU Israel Center in Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayishlach. It is at first recording, at first broadcast, Thursday, Yom Chamishi, the 16th of Kislev. That means Hanukkah is quickly approaching. 5767 on the secular calendar. It is the 7th of December in the year 06. 7th of December is Pearl Harbor Day, a day that shall live in infamy, to quote President Roosevelt. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shimavakoli. Tihiena aznecha kashuvot lekol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imecha haslicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai. Ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael. Mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, viyotzieim mitzara lirvacha, umeyafela laora, umishibud lgeula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, vinomar amen. Okay, let's plunge right into Parshat HaShavua, the weekly portion, and get our feet wet, so to speak. Parshat Vayishlach, like all of the book of Bereshit, are stories of the Avot and Imahot, the mothers and the fathers, and the formation of the Jewish people when they were just a family. We have in Vayishlach the continuing story of Yaakov's return to his father's home, to the land of Israel, after 20 years have passed, during which time he has married, not once, but twice, and actually four times. If you want to look at it that way, he has had 11 sons and a daughter born to him, and he has spent the time in Lavan's house working for his family and working for Lavan, and he parts. That's the end of Vayetze from last week. Now he is coming back to Eretz Yisrael, close to the border of Israel. He sends messengers ahead, and he finds that his brother Esav is coming towards him and will soon encounter him. There's a lot of little things here. Maybe I'll get back to some of them. I want to go to a main focus here, and I need you to be a little patient as I lay it out in the following way. The books of the Torah, especially Vayikra and Devarim, are filled with mitzvot, commandments, positive commandments of things we must do, prohibitions of things we may not do. The storyline is on the weak side, I would say. The book of Shemot and the book of Bamidbar have more mitzvot, Shemot more than Bamidbar, fewer mitzvot than Vayikra and Devarim, but more storyline. This is just a rule of thumb. It's a sketch. The book of Bereshit is primarily story, episode from creation of the world till the deaths of Yaakov and his sons, and the finishing of that first phase where Jewish life is now going from family to nationhood. It'll take a while, but that's the direction that it's going in. There are only three commandments in the whole book of Bereshit. Bereshit is there to teach us many other things, but as far as commandments are concerned, there are only three. We encountered the first one in the weekly portion of Bereshit, when God commanded the newly created Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, Ish v'Ishto, a man and his wife, to be fruitful and multiply. This command was repeated later to Noach and again later in this week's Sedra to Yaakov. But essentially, it is a command to all humanity to be fruitful, to multiply, to have generation after generation of people populating this earth and hopefully treating it properly. So the mitzvah of Pru Urevu, that's what it's called, comes to us in the context of the episodes describing creation of the world. The second command, also a positive command, is Brit Milah, circumcision. And that comes to us in Parshat Lech Lecha in the context of God's command to Avraham to walk before him and to become pure and complete and straightforward. And that, in that context of the story of Avraham circumcising himself and his son Yishmael at the time and the male members of his household, is also the command in perpetuity, just as be fruitful and multiply is one of the 613 mitzvot, so is the command, of course, to circumcise. And the next we have a command, it is in this week's Parsha of Vayishlach, the only other one in the book of Bereshit, the only prohibition in the entire book of Bereshit, at least on our list of 613, that's a tricky clarification, but leave it that qualification, which needs clarification, which you're not going to get now. That's the way it is. In Vayishlach, in the aftermath of the Torah telling us that when Yaakov moved his family and his camp to one side of the Yabok River, and then went back across the river to retrieve some small items he had left there, he found himself alone and was attacked by what the Torah calls an ish, a person. Our tradition tells us that we're dealing with the guardian angel of Esav. Another way of looking at it is it's the personification of the evil inclination in all of us that Yaakov had to grapple with. Leave that alone. Let's look at it as the guardian angel of Esav. As a result of that encounter, Yaakov prevails, but is injured, specifically in the morning when he released the angel finally. He was found limping, and that becomes symbolic of the fact that the enemies of Israel, the enemies of the Jewish people, will be able to injure us to the point we are limping and then some, but will not ever be able to vanquish us, thank God. It's bad enough to limp. It's bad enough to suffer the hits that we've suffered. But we will always be there. That idea of Yaakov's being injured in his hip is symbolized and perpetuated in a command called Gid Hanasheh. I'll tell you about that in a moment. But the Torah's wording is Al Kain, therefore, Lo Yochlu V'nei Yisrael et Gid Hanasheh. The Jewish people shall not eat the Gid Hanasheh, purposely leaving it untranslated at the moment. Asher Al Kaf HaYarech, where is this Gid Hanasheh? I better translate it now. It's generally rendered as the sciatic nerve and its branches that innervate the femur, the thigh bone of the animal, and surrounding fats of certain types and other vessels. We don't eat. We shall not eat. We may not eat the Gid Hanasheh that is in the spoon-shaped part of the thigh. Ad hayom hazeh, until this very day, ki naga b'chaf yerach Yaakov b'gid hanasheh. because Yaakov was injured in his Gid Hanasha. The commentaries based on the Talmud are very quick to emphasize here. We are not talking about just a story. We are talking about a commandment among the 613 commandments of the Torah, a prohibition among the 365 mitzvot that are prohibitions. As if the Torah later would have said, which it doesn't, and God spoke to Moshe saying, speak to the people of Israel and command them that they may not eat the Gid Hanasheh. Equivalent, same level prohibition as anything else in the Torah. Even though our presentation, the Torah's presentation to us, I really should say, is in the context of this story. Now this, first of all, should be made clear that it's not just a symbol of the battle of Esav and Yaakov, of the guardian angel and Yaakov, and the anti-Semitism of Jewish history and, unfortunately, current events. But it is a command in the Torah like any other command. Let's focus on that for a moment. When the Torah says, twice I think, that we are not allowed to wear garments of wool and linen together, that is called sha'atnez. It is one of the prohibitions in the Torah, just like Gid Hanasheh. But unlike Gid Hanasheh, it has no context, no story in which to see it and to understand it. It is generally considered a chok, a command that is there, period, although there are many attempts at explaining and giving us a little insight into the rationale, perhaps, that God used in order to command us the prohibition of shatnez. But when a person avoids shatnez, it is a pure example of fulfilling the command of the king, of God, period, because he told you to do it, he told you not to do it, you do or you don't. When it comes to what I would like to call a contextual mitzvah, a mitzvah that has a context in the Torah, that goes beyond the command, the wording of the command, that context becomes part of the way we observe a particular mitzvah or avoid a particular prohibition. In other words, when you, just to jump to a different example, when you sit down at the Seder table and you have a portion of matzah, first and foremost, you are fulfilling the command of the Torah to eat matzah in the evening of the 15th of Nisan. Period. You know what? Let's change the period, also known as a full stop, to a semicolon. Because we will continue the sentence by saying that we have a context for the command of matzah. We have the statement in the Haggadah, which first poses the question, why do we eat matzah? And then answers us. And we have that as immediate we find it immediately preceding the actual performance of the mitzvah to eat matzah, and it is clear that you need to include the story behind matzah when you do the mitzvah, because it's almost, or it's the mitzvah, it's part of the mitzvah. Some mitzvot have more text, some have less text, some have no text, like I mentioned. They're all there. And when there is text, it is important to include the ideas of that text in the performance of that mitzvah or the avoidance of that prohibition. In the case of Gid Hanasheh, you can't help but make the connection, because that's the way the Torah presents it. In other words, it's not a separate thing of dwell in a sukkah 7 days. End of verse. New verse. In order that such and such should happen. Here, it is a story and a statement. Al kein, therefore, we may not eat gid hanasheh. The Torah is telling us up front, there is a reason for this command. So the story is important, but the command on a level of command is also important. Now, specifically to this story, and Yaakov being alone and encountering this guardian angel of Esav, before I continue what I have to say, let us listen to a Shlomo Kalbach song performed by Mordechai ben David. It includes the pasuk from this week's Sedra. It has another pasuk from Yeshayahu as well, but it refers to Yaakov being alone. And the words from this Sedra are Vayivater Yaakov Levado, Vayayovek Ish Imo. Yaakov was alone, and a man engaged him in a wrestling match. That's what we always used to say. Ad Olot HaShachar, until the dawn. Very symbolic as well as very literal.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Mordechai Ben David from an album called Kumsitz. It is a lovely, lovely album which is available both in audio only or in video with audio. A very, very enjoyable, very moody kind of songs, and this is one of them. Couple of side points. The problem that Yaakov had when he was alone, even though we see it in a positive light of what he gained by that experience, comes to teach us that a person should not be alone at night and should not put himself into any kind of dangerous position. Even though, as I said, God protected him and it came out very significantly all right. It's still a warning that one should not do those kind of things. Another side point is that tradition teaches us that what he went for was a small flask of olive oil, which he used to anoint the monuments and the altars which he erected in God's honor. But some find the connection, especially since Vayishlach is right before Chanukah, where we hear a small pitcher of oil, ding, 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 a light goes off in your mind, and you can't help but think that in some way this is the precursor of the oil that was found on Chanukah. It definitely makes an interesting link, because the episodes of Yaakov's life, and especially those of Yosef and his sons, are very much tied in with the Chanukah story. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Vayishlach. Before we get back into the topic of the weekly portion, I happen to have been interrupted a couple of moments ago by a very good friend, a young fellow named David Kalimnik, who is a comedian. Not an easy thing to be for anyone living in Israel, and especially a religious fellow, nice guy, a rabbi, son of a rabbi who happens to have been a classmate of mine. But we turn this into a little bit of an interview, which you shall hear right now. With me in the studio, live, well, actually he is live, this is not much of a studio, it is my office as I record Torah Tidbits audio here, but we have a funny person. His name is David Kalimnik.
Shalom, shalom, shalom. That's fine.
All right, just tell us a little bit about, first of all, off the wall in general, and specifically what you're doing this Motzoi Shabbat here at the Israel Center.
Off the Wall Comedy Empire represents the comedic delegates of the Holy City, and so hence we view comedy as a necessary religious experience. We started in 2 years ago, at the Little House in Baca in Yerushalayim, and we are also the main English-speaking comedians of Israel. And also we've been doing Hebrew comedy, and it's been great working recently over here at the Israel Center.
And what do you have in line this coming Motzoi Shabbat?
This coming Motzoi Shabbat, we have the first student comedy competition of Yerushalayim, which basically translates to the first student comedy competition of New York yeshiva students in Israel. And that should be exciting. I mean, the kids are into it. It's nice. This guy Mordechai from Machon Meir, who I believe made Aliyah himself, came over to me and he's like, "We should do this." And I said, "Yeah, great idea. Let's do it."
So who's eligible to perform and who's expected in your audience?
Anybody that goes to tour to Israel Center classes is also eligible to perform. Any kind of student. We'll take anybody. What was the next question?
Audience.
The audience is going to be it's going to be a regular Israel Center audience, a regular off the wall comedy audience. It's just good English speaking Olim and visitors to Yerushalayim.
And that's. And you already have people who put themselves in position to either be funny or make a fool of themselves.
Yeah, I'm going to be up there. I think a few other people. There are nine competitors right now, so that should be nice.
And what, may we ask, is the prize going to be?
The prize is the winner is going to get a spot at the next Off the Wall Comedy Empire stand-up show, which is going to be December 23rd. I mean, before that is the Find Me a Wife show, which is basically me pleading for a wife, which I'll do right now. My phone number is 050-875-5688. I am on Dosey Date. I think it's Uncle D at Dosey Date. So you can check out all the statistics there. And then in the following week's show, the 23rd, they're going to get a spot there. Also, there might be a food prize kind of thing. Then there would be like a monetary prize to the winner.
Sounds good. Too bad it's not open to educational directors of...
Oh, it definitely is.
Oh, it is? Well, it is. I think I have something else to do anyway. So.
Are you going
to
get up?
No, I'm not. Oh. No, I'm not.
How do you say flop sweat in Hebrew? We have a question from the audience. How do you say flop sweat in Hebrew? The problem is when I perform Hebrew comedy and I do get flop sweat, I don't know how to say that. So there, it's just, I think it comes out as a cry in Hebrew, which I think is lefkot. That's flop sweat. But thank you.
And thank you, David Klimnik. You live in Israel or are you visiting? As if I didn't know.
Exactly. And I live here, but I do have shlichut in planned into my financial future. So give it a few years, but you know, Emir Tzashem, I'm going to stay here. You'll have to in Emir Tzashem for the Israel Center fans, and I'll be staying in Israel for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you, and Bahatzlacha, specifically with this Motzoi Shabbat, and in general with all your endeavors.
Thank you.
Since we've broken stride on the talking about the Sedra, let's put in another song here. This one is also appropriate for this week. It comes from not the Parsha, but the Haftarah. The Haftorah, which is the entire little booklet of Ovadia, one of Treyasar, the 12 small prophet books, which are joined together in that one book known as Treyasar, which is Aramaic for 12. Ovadia, one chapter long, the 21 verses of which we read this Shabbat. It carries on, as most Haftorahs do, with the theme of the Parsha, and this being the clash of Yaakov and Esav. We finish the Haftorah with the words, Va'alu Moshiim Bahar Tzion, Lishpot et Har Esav, V'hayata l'Hashem ha'melucha. That ultimately there will be a judgment of Esav, and that God's supremacy in this world will emerge for all to see, and we, the Jewish people, will prevail and no longer be vexed by Esav and his descendants and his spiritual heirs. Well, guess what? You're going to have to take a rain check on that song. It's not converting properly from the format in which we have it, and I won't be able to put it into this show. Hopefully, we'll give you a rain check and let you listen to it at a different time, but as long as we're in the mode expecting music, before we continue on Parshat HaShavua, on Vayishlach, let's listen to a song which has nothing to do with the Parsha, but it is a beautiful song, I think. It's from an album called David Gabay, or something like that. He is the singer, and he is that's the name of the album. And this particular track is called Havi'i, which comes from the Navi Yeshayahu. Amar Litzafon, I will say to the north, give them over, and to the south, do not withhold. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth. It talks about kibbutz galiot, the ingathering of the exile, which is either a forerunner of the Mashiach's time or part of the Mashiach's time, something which we have been privileged to witness in our own time, and all you could say is, may it continue. David Gabay. Thank you.
Oy ma, oy ma, la tzofoin teini, oh hoy. Ule teimon, al tichloi. Oy ma, oy ma, la tzofoin teini, oh hoy. Ule teimon, al tichloi. So fointeini, oh, uletimon al tichloi. Rimar, rimar, at so fointeini, oh, uletimon al tichloi.
Da da da.
That was long. I hope you enjoyed it. And I apologize if it was too long, but it's a nice song and a nice sentiment. And it is not just a song for us here on Torah Tidbits Audio. It goes with our fervent prayer to God that we see the continuing and increasing of the Kibbutz Galiot until the coming of Mashiach and beyond. Okay, let's get back to Gid HaNasheh, sciatic nerve, the part of a leg, both right and left, the hind leg of a cow, sheep, goat, basically, that must be removed in order to allow us to eat from the rest of the animal, is done by an intricate system called nikur in Hebrew, trabering in Yiddish, and porging in English. It is a highly skilled operation, which in most cases in the United States was deemed uneconomical because of how difficult it is. And I think still, this might be a little old information, or maybe it's still current, the standard practice in slaughterhouses in the States, kosher slaughterhouses, is to sell the hind quarter of the animal to a non-kosher market. And that constitutes the removal of the Gid HaNasheh because it's the removal of the entire hind quarter. And therefore, the halakha is observed, the rest of the animal may be eaten from, and they don't have to go through that difficult process of nikur, of trabering. In Israel, it is more common to find the actual practice of nikur. It is still a very difficult thing to do. It produces cuts of meat that are not available generally to the kosher market. And it exists. Let's leave it like that. We're talking about a nerve which branches off and innervates the bone and the tissue in that area. And it's just a difficult thing to do. Your average housewife of old, who used to regularly prepare her chickens and kosher them, make them kosher, would not be able to do nikur with beef or goat or sheep. And it was done by professionals, and it probably added to the costs, and it just wasn't worth it. But it exists. And as I say, those cuts of meat are available in some restaurants here in Israel. They happen to be particularly tender cuts, I'm told, and in high demand, and go for a high fee. On a more Torah level here, I mean, that was just the practical side of the issue. More than that, I really don't know. Following the encounter between Yaakov and the guardian angel of Esav, we have the actual physical encounter of Yaakov and Esav. The following morning, they were scheduled to meet each other, and without going into all of the details there, they meet. The Torah describes them embracing and says that Esav kissed Yaakov. He fell on his neck. It's an expression for hugging him. Vayishakehu. And he kissed him. The word Vayishakehu in a Sefer Torah, in the Torah scroll, is written with six dots, one each above the letters of the word Vayishakehu. That is the scribal equivalent of asterisks, calling our attention to the word. And the commentaries differ in what the significance of the asterisks, so to speak, above the word Vayishakehu. There's a fanciful explanation, which I remember hearing as a child. I don't know the source for it, but it was that Esav attempted to bite Yaakov in the neck, which, as people know, is potentially a fatal bite, depending on what you break, what you sever. And a miracle happened, and Yaakov's neck turned to stone, Esav biting down on stone or marble, whatever. And we used to be told, and he saw stars from the experience, and those are represented by the dots above the word. Rashi does not bring that opinion down. He does quote the Medrash Rabbah with two conflicting opinions, but it's important to go through this. First opinion was the kiss was not sincere, and therefore the Torah tradition is to mark it with those dots to say, yes, the word is Vayishakeu, and he kissed them, but you should know it wasn't sincere. Second opinion is that of Rabban Shimon Bar Yochai, who says, even though it is a well-known principle, fact of Jewish life, maxim, call it what you want, that Esav, Harusha, that wicked Esav, hates Yaakov, at this moment of their encounter, Esav was overwhelmed and overcome by emotion, and he kissed him with all his heart. Either way, insincere or atypically sincere, the word gets its asterisks. What we need to look at this is not just as Yaakov and Esav, two brothers who happen to be twins, but as the progenitors of, in the one hand, Yaakov, the progenitor of Bnei Yisrael, the people of Israel, the Jewish people throughout all generations, and Esav, the symbol of the archetype of one who hates Israel, the anti-Semite. Esav's grandson was Amalek. The Medrash says that Esav told his grandson to get those people because he, Esav himself, was not successful in vanquishing Yaakov. At least his descendants will be able to do that. And Amalek, backed up with Esav, we'll say, becomes the stereotyped Sone Yisrael, anti-Semite, as we call him, although that's a term that we have to use properly, and represents the perennial, eternal, perpetual, until the time of Mashiach, hatred of the Esavs in the world to the Yaakovs in the world. Then you have to look at the kiss. When Anwar Sadat, the then president of Egypt, paid a visit to Jerusalem, spoke at the Knesset, embraced Menachem Begin, Prime Minister of Israel, back in 1977, I believe it was, and they kissed. First of all, you definitely have to put asterisks on that kiss. Second of all, what does the asterisk mean? Does it mean that it wasn't sincere? A distinct possibility. Does it mean that he was overwhelmed by emotion and kissed him with all his heart? Let's hope for that, and it's also a very good possibility. But let's backtrack for one second. Take a look, again, at this dispute. We are not talking about the simple idea of one opinion says it was sincere, one opinion says it wasn't sincere. That would be sort of an even dispute. On the one hand, this guy says it wasn't sincere. On the other hand, no, it was sincere. The yes sincere is prefaced by a statement. The statement is a truism, and it is undisputed. Esav sone liyaakov. Esav hates his brother Yaakov, Jacob. And that, being incontrovertible, is the backdrop to say, okay, but this time, was it typical anti-Jewish, anti-Israel behavior, or, you know, with an agenda, with a different thing in mind, or was it at this moment sincere? And I would like to say, I would like to think, that it was sincere. But even the sincere kiss has to be examined in the background of Esav Sone Liyaakov to say, why is he doing this? that it is pure brotherly love, denies the history there, and denies, unfortunately, the reality. Because Esav sone Yaakov. There's always going to be anti-Semitism in one form or another until the time of Mashiach. But how well is that kept in check? And why does someone purport to love Israel, to hug us, to kiss us? Is it sincere? Is it a deep regret for past behavior? Not of the individuals, but of the religion or the nation, and a serious attempt at reconciliation? Or is there an agenda that makes the kiss at worst, or at best, insincere, and at worst, an entree to carrying out that agenda, which ultimately will not work in our favor? A real bad note on which to finish, so let's put it on the positive sense of the time will come when things will get clarified for the nations of the world, and they will recognize. And at that time, V'hoi Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz b'yom ha'hu yeh Hashem echad u'shmo echad. God will be one, His name will be one, and we will be recognized as His chosen people, by all people, not just by ourselves. Not a bad way to put a positive spin on a otherwise negative thing. I mean, we happen to be in the middle of those parshiot, which are talking about the problems between Yaakov and Esav, but we know what's coming up in next week's Seder, the problems of Yosef and his brothers, which we're going to have to wait until next week or later to discuss. In the meantime, that's it for this issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. Shabbat Shalom and Lehishtameah. And if you're still listening, this is our fun time. Last week at the end of the show, on the Orthodox Union OU radio version, we had an old commercial for Martin Paint. I remember fondly from that same period, we're talking 30, 35 years ago or something like that, a series of Time magazine commercials. This is one that I found embedded into an old radio mystery theater, and I present it for those who have fond memories of it, and I hope that the rest of you will also find it amusing. But this was a standard commercial of a whole series way back then.
Fletcher Whitney Jr.
Karen Sue Butler.
Fletcher!
It's been a long time, Karen.
And look at you!
Look at me!
Look at you!
Look at me!
The car, the chauffeur, the clothes!
Private jet, the bill in Rome. I'm just Bonissimo Allegro, as they say.
Oh, in school you used to be.
I know.
And now look at
me!
Fletcher, what changed you?
Ever hear of Time magazine, Karen?
You own Time magazine?
No.
You're the editor?
No.
You sell?
No, I read Time magazine, Karen.
What, Fletcher?
Every week, without fail. Every word from books to business, science to cinema. Now the world is my clan.
Time changed you?
See, I learned more than what's happening, Karen. I learned wit and charm. And soon I was the hit of the jet set. Then came the job offers, the stocks, the bonds, the phone calls from the White House. I was Mondo Buffo, as they say.
Well, Fletcher, you certainly have changed.
Yes. In fact, I'm surprised you recognized me, Karen.
You're still the only man I know who carries a teddy bear.
Oh, wave hi to Karen, Sparky.
Time makes everything more interesting, including you.
Please do not take this as a commercial for Time magazine. It happens to be. And it's certainly not an endorsement of Time magazine. I haven't been keeping up with it anyway. But it's a fond memory that I wanted to share with you, because Torah Tidbits Audio is part Divrei Torah, part music, and part just having a good time and a little bit of a mental rapport with the audience or something like that.
That's the last straw! Now I use my secret weapon! Been a little slice of heaven, 'cause it hasn't.